Chapter 1. Grey clouds drifted over the early morning sky as the city stirred. Looking out over the bay, I warmed to the prospect of my first day off in a week. Lunch with my parents, which meant my mother's ravioli con funghi, inquiries about my health, and complaints that I didn't visit enough. Yesterday's unread supplements sat on the worktop behind me, and two tickets for Cardiff's Premiership game against Chelsea that afternoon were propped against the Gaggia coffee machine, which made a comforting hissing sound. After the match, I'd have dinner with Trish, tell her about lunch and roll my eyes, describing my mother's comments, and then we'd return to the flat and freshly laundered sheets. It promised to be a typical Sunday until Boyd rang.
"Boss, there's a floater in the taff."
"Who's the duty inspector?"
"Detective Inspector Hobbs, and he's investigating a rape in Grangetown. He told me to ask for you."
"Is there nobody else?"
"Sorry, boss."
I fumbled for a pen in the drawer under the worktop before tugging at a piece of paper from a notepad and writing down the details.
"The ambulance and the fire brigade are on their way," Boyd said.
"When will they arrive?"
"Half an hour."
I looked at my watch and knew that after the body had been fished from the taff and the formalities concluded in the morgue, I'd be at my parents' home in good time for lunch. I was chewing on a piece of toast and watching the espresso dribbling into a cup when my mobile rang. Trisha's number appeared on the screen.
"Missed you last night, John."
"And me you," I said. But I was so tired I couldn't walk straight. "Your mum okay?"
"Yeah, she's fine. You still all right for later?"
"I'm looking forward to it, but I've just had a call about a body in the taff."
"I thought you're off duty."
"So did I, but I should be finished mid-morning. How about coming with me for lunch?"
"I wouldn't want to come between an Italian boy and his mother now, would I?"
I rang off and swallowed the last of the cold espresso. I tidied the kitchen and checked around the flat. I chose a pair of well-pressed denims, a red cotton shirt, and from the bottom of the wardrobe, a pair of brogues with a deep brown shine. Before I left, I picked up the remote for the television and fiddled with the controls until I'd pressed the right button to record Top Gear. By the mirror near the apartment door, I drew a hand through my hair and pulled on a light fleece before walking down to the car park. I found an Elvis CD in the glove compartment of my Mondeo and pushed it into the player. I turned the volume up, and Heartbreak Hotel filled the car as I fired the engine into life. The traffic was quiet as I passed the tinplate works, thin plumes of white smoke drifting from its chimneys. A patrol car, lights flashing, siren blaring, shot past me, followed by a couple of taxis heading for the hotels in the bay. I stopped at the traffic lights by the prison, a dark Victorian relic, and watched as a couple of joggers ran in front of the car. I turned towards the centre of the city and overtook a council refuse lorry crawling along the street, collecting the Saturday night rubbish. Eventually, I spotted the fire engine as it drove down into Wood Street, and I followed it towards the taff in the Millennium Stadium. The tender flashed its lights before stopping behind an ambulance, and I pulled up on the pavement a little way behind it. I walked over towards two paramedics standing by the railings, peering down into the river. Boyd walked towards me, sipping from a takeaway plastic cup. Empty burger boxes and chip papers blew around the concrete. A chilling wind whipped around the stadium and cut through my fleece. The fire tender's reversing alarm sounded, and the paramedics stopped their chatter and turned to watch. I stepped up to the railings and looked down into the taff. The body was floating face down, caught by a piece of wood, wedged against an outfall that was dribbling a dirty coloured liquid into the river. A heavy, fishy smell hung in the air. The tender finished its manoeuvre and parked by the railing. The fire crew and paramedics were joking and talking, as though fishing a dead body out of the river was an everyday occurrence.
"There it is, boss."
Boyd leant over the railings and pointed towards the bay. The sound of the outboard was clear, and we watched as an inflatable bobbed up and down. A diver dropped into the water from the small boat, and once he'd secured the corpse, waved a hand to the crew above him. The tender hummed, and the cradle lifted clear of the river, a stream of water cascading onto the surface. The fire crew lowered it onto the concourse, and I stepped towards the body. I looked down, and then up, at the troubled faces of the paramedics.